freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Oh, here we go. Another Brock and Salk podcast. The whole gang together today. Howdy's here. Kyle's here. Everybody's together, Brock. It's a good day. And honestly,
precipice of the tournament of champions.
Is that what we're going to talk about today?
Probably.
The pro-am as we speak on a Wednesday morning.
I mean, let's just say the tournament of champions starts tomorrow, obviously.
You got Phil Mickelson already posted a video this morning. He's playing with Trey Wingo, who holed out in the pro-am
eagle. 39 of the 40 players invited are there. Rory wasn't able to make it this year. You got 9 of the top 10 players in the world, 14 of the top 16. So, yeah, I think we're about ready for the tournament of champions if you want to go there.
Close. Camera Champ actually tested
protocols.
So,
of that?
38 of the 40. But good try. Yeah.
That's too bad. Poor Cameron. Otherwise, he was my pick to click in this. Of course. No, things are good now. You know what, Brock? Seahawks won. Everything has gone away from this year because you got to see him drop 50 points on Detroit, and all is well with the world.
Right. Right. Just like Kapalua. Yeah, just beautiful.
Just
Maui.
Like the end of the peanut brittle.
Right. They say winning cures all, right?
It does.
It's all best cured. Deodorant.
There you go.
And beating the Lions is...
This seems a little bit more, less like deodorant and more like Glade.
Axe body spray.
Yeah, Glade that you spray in the bathroom. Like,
Pam.
It doesn't make the smell go away. It just now adds another smell that's better to the smell that's already in there, which is why Heather bought this. Now, I don't know what this says about me, but Heather bought this little mini spray that goes in the toilet. Have you seen this?
No.
You spray before you
use it. Is it the poo-pourri?
Yes.
Yes, I have seen that.
Before you use the bathroom, you spray it in the toilet, like one little spritz.
Creates like a vapor.
Yes. And then you use the toilet, and you know what? It works.
Interesting.
I swear to God, the thing works.
Wow.
And we're living in this little apartment. We got 4 people sharing one bathroom in 1,000 square feet. That's what led to the purchase of this poo-pourri.
Should stock that in plain bathrooms.
They should stock it everywhere, man. Public
bathrooms. It's unbelievable. Is it like the old bazooka spray? Is it a small little container you spray?
Like the gum?
Is it like toilet banaca?
Yes.
Banaca.
That's what I would call it.
Banaca.
Yes.
That's what I meant.
It's
banaca.
Like toilet
and if
banaca.
You have enough, the toilet will be drunk.
Yes.
Which is very exciting. It's like a bunch of 12-year-old toilets just downing banaca. Doubting poopery.
Now it says here it's got 0.001% alcohol.
Your toilet turns into a 6th grade boy. It's amazing. It's got acne. It's not really sure what to do with itself. All right, so winning cures all, Brock. What did you make of what we saw? I mean, they did look good. I mean,
they did.
I don't care who you're playing. They look good. The Lions, they are a bad team. A lot of that has to do, though, with the fact, at least in this game, their quarterback... I mean, look, I know I like to sort of joke like, hey, I've never heard of this guy and I don't know who he is. I hadn't been paying a ton of attention to what was going on with that game in particular because the story is so much bigger over the last week or two about Russ and Pete and John. They're out of it. So I wasn't doing my normal research that I would do on the Detroit Lions. And instead, I was like, I start watching the game. I was like, oh, yeah, wait, he's not going to play, right? Goff's not playing. Wonder who their backup is. They brought Tim Boyle out, and I swear to you, I've never heard that name in my entire life.
Well, and I swear to you, that game one of last year when I was doing the NFL and I got bumped over, it was Green Bay at Minnesota, and I looked at the backup for Green Bay, and I swear to you, I had no idea
who Tim Boyle
was. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So there you go. So, because he was bad in college, right?
He was horrendous in college.
How's that guy in the NFL?
He was... what?
Seriously?
Yes. No.
He's horrendous.
He was bad
at my notes.
And then he went to Eastern Kentucky?
Correct. I looked at my notes. I was like, this has got to be wrong. There's no way you could be a 47% passer, one touchdown, 13 picks, and somehow...
What?
Yes.
Yes.
He's that bad?
Yes. That bad.
Oh, that's outrageous. He was that bad. Isn't that amazing?
Yes. He was that horrendous.
So it's not really our fault for not having him on our radar.
Well, I mean, I only knew of him last year as a backup there. And I remember watching Green Bay practice. I did a Green Bay game late in the year and actually got to watch him practice. And he was not good in practice. I was like, this guy's just wholly inaccurate. I mean, he can't. I don't get it. I mean, I know Aaron Rodgers is there and he's the MVP. So, what's the big deal about the backup? But yeah, he was bad, and boy, is he inaccurate.
Jeez. Yeah, he certainly had some
problems. So his whole role is then just ego stroking whoever the starting quarterback off. Is.
Yeah,
like Aaron Rodgers needed him so that he could be reminded of how much better he is than everyone else. And like, Jared Goff needs anything he can get an edge, anything at all. Like, give him that guy.
Maybe he's the brains of the operation there.
No, I did see, or I did read somewhere, maybe it was even Schneider's pregame, that he had interest. Had he not gone to Detroit, they were interested in signing him.
Great. So,
I'm not saying that
he
like,
wasn't
a jerk,
that
either.
Bad. I mean, he's not good, but he was no worse than some of the other quarterbacks that teams will run out there, right? I mean, like, he was bad, but he wasn't like...
We have levels. We got our Max Hall level.
He was not
the Brooks
as bad
Bollinger
as
level.
Not as bad as him either. He was better than John Skelton, Max Hall, and Brooks Bollinger.
Yeah.
Wow.
I would put him...
He's pretty good.
Like a whole level above those. Like in Mike Sando's tiers.
Yeah.
This is like the poopery version.
Yes.
Right. Like, which level are you
at? He stinks, but you can't smell it.
Right. Yeah. He's kind of he's silent but deadly.
Yes.
Anyway, he's not responsible for their rush defense.
Nope.
Their rush defense, they were given up. I looked it up. Coming into that game, they were 17th in the league in terms of yards per carry against them. So, middle of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Seahawks ran for over 200 yards. Rashad Penny had 170 of them.
Yes.
I mean, like, that's not because they're the Detroit Lions. They're the worst team ever. They went out and ran the ball on them.
No, and they beat the Arizona Cardinals a couple weeks prior. And I want to say, again, doing a little bit of research, that it was only the seventh time, like, in the Super Bowl era that they have given up over 50 points a game, as bad as they have been, to score 50 points on an NFL team. That was the first time the Seahawks had scored 50 since that trip to Buffalo.
Toronto.
Where they played in Toronto.
Yes.
Right? In 2012.
Skydome.
Where it was late in the year.
You know what happened the next week? Howdy walked around with cake in his head.
Oh, he did.
That happened
that the Cardinals
I think
game?
The next week.
The Seahawks
like
running.
John Skelton.
Yes.
Demolished.
That happened the next week. Howdy walked.
Demolished.
Howdy couldn't have been more right, and I couldn't have been more wrong. I've never eaten it more than that week. Probably the most embarrassing moment of my career. I should have pulled a Clayton, too. I should have done what Clayton did after Tim Tebow threw the game-winning touchdown pass.
Beat the Steelers.
And beat the Steelers, yes. Which John had said was a 0%
chance.
I am terrified of the Arizona Cardinals. All right, that's enough. But I should have done that. Been like, yeah, well, you know, I didn't know that this was going to happen and
right.
That was going to happen. So I should have done.
Keep that clip going, Howdy.
No.
I'm terrified of the Atlanta Falcons.
Why is that in there?
I don't know.
I don't remember saying it quite that way.
I'm terrified.
You just have a lot of these in there now.
A lot
you?
Of times you've been terrified.
Yeah, a lot of time that you spent trying to make me look bad. By
I am terrified of the A's.
He spent so much time being terrified, team.
Why would you do that to me?
I am terrified of the Arizona Cardinals.
It's not enough that I embarrassed myself the first time. You got to keep going. Anyway, we're trying to talk about the Seahawks.
And that was John Skelton, by the way.
It was
John Skelton.
Was he the Helter Skelton?
He's the guy who had the offbeat headphones?
No. That's a different guy.
Who was
that? Was Max Hall?
No.
No.
It was another terrible Cardinals.
Oh, Ryan Lindley.
Yeah, it was Ryan Lindley. Oh, I think he's the one I actually wanted to put in the awful list of terrible.
Yes.
And then they had that other guy who could just throw the ball far, and they wanted him to play a little
bit. He was also a tight end for Logan Thomas.
Yes,
Virginia
and they were like,
Tech.
They brought him in for just for Hail Marys.
Like, nobody will know. We're going to just sneak in our deep thrower.
God, I hate the Cardinals. I know people are so much more on the whole, they hate the Niners and that's their rivalry. The Rams and the Cardinals bring up so much more passionate hate for me.
Mm.
I mean, I don't like the Niners. Don't get me wrong. I never have. I mean, even as a kid and a Lawrence Taylor fan, I've hated the Niners my whole life. Not because of the Seahawks, just because I've hated them. Just because, you know, it's good common sense. But, God, I hate the Rams and the Cardinals.
Yeah. That's why you're terrified of them.
Yes.
And we're in that matchup.
That's
but
true.
You were not of the Lions.
That's all true.
You
but the Seahawks
terrified.
Beat the pants off the Lions. How are they able to do that, Brock? And how is this offense able to come together? And why am I getting so much grief from the other quarterback on this station telling me that's like the whole offense Russ has wanted all along and not something that I think he's tried to avoid? They ran for how many times? It was a running offense, and Russ worked off of it. Isn't that like his big complaint?
Well, I think the biggest thing is they were functional up front. I think his biggest complaint, and you're going to when are you going to argue with him? By the way,
I don't know. I'm thinking about not doing that.
Are you terrified of Jake Eaves? Say it, Howdy. Play it and say that.
Give me the big terrified of Jake Eaves.
You don't want that smoke.
Yeah, I don't really want that smoke. I feel like I tried to argue with him, like, well, he wasn't there, and I, like, tied myself in a knot doing so. It was not the best segment.
You eventually ended up making his point for him.
Did I?
By the time
accidentally.
You were finished.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, great.
I know. Yeah, so I think I might just cancel that. I don't feel like I'm well prepared, so I may just bail and let Jake argue with himself.
Well, I'm going to say that one of the things Jake has probably got in his holster is to say to you, Mike, remember, Mike, this all started last January, on the Dan Patrick show when he went on there. And what was his biggest complaint? His biggest complaint was his gets hit too much in his offensive line. And he wanted to remedy and fix the offensive line, right? That he has just been sacked too much.
Well, he's been right about that. I mean, we've said that from the beginning.
Yep. So, and what changed on Sunday? Their O-line played the best game. They finally put the dude with the big old back. Okay, we finally saw. I don't know why Phil Haynes has not gotten more credit.
I mean, he even got, like, earlier this year, they were down four linemen, and they still didn't even dress him while he was healthy.
Correct. He was a healthy, inactive scratch like LJ Collier for big chunks of this season. And he went in there and was unbelievably functional. And Kerhan, the right tackle, is a functional run-blocking right tackle. He's better at that than he is certainly as a guard and certainly as a pass protector first. And tight ends were all healthy. And then this guy that used to be a first-round pick 4 years ago is finally playing with tremendous confidence and patience and hurdling people at the line of scrimmage and showing an explosiveness and the gear that he's right. got.
We're going to get back to the larger argument, but just a moment or two on Penny. That little sidestep move is so sweet.
Yes.
Right? Like that ability to come through the line, have a safety coming at him, and just kind of quickly shift and sidestep the guy.
He has almost like a Derrick Henry deception of speed.
Right, because he's
like
big,
he beats
but fast.
The angles. Yes. He did that around the end round, and all he like just almost in slow motion put his foot down and turned the corner.
I was trying to tell Brock last week, as he just reminds me of Sean Alexander
he does.
In that way.
I brought
that
up.
So big, and he doesn't want the smoke.
Turn.
But when he gets out there, man, he
That's
is.
A good I brought that up to Hasselbeck today, and he was like, yeah, no. And just like quickly, he's like, yeah, I don't really see that. And he just moved on. It's like, okay.
No, he's a slow, deliberate turner of the edge.
Yes. But once he's gone, like he's got that speed and that
If Eddie Lacy and Sean Alexander made it, it'd be Rashad Penny.
Oh, that's kind of an interesting, like the good Eddie Lacy before he got here.
Yes.
That's kind of an interesting one. Yeah,
I think because he's got a little more girth, I think, than Sean does.
But Sean was deceptively fast for size. He was not a small.
He was a glider.
He wasn't Chris Johnson. I mean, like, he was a big dude.
Nope. He's wearing elbow pads, which also always made him look slower.
See, you couldn't. I should have told you, Mike. Like, if you would have told me, or hey, I got Hasselbeck on, should bring up Sean and compare. I would have said, you don't do that.
Just don't even bother.
No. I mean, Sean wouldn't catch and he wouldn't pass block. So there were
some issues there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the it was funny.
I mean, God bless Sean and what he did, and certainly around the end zone.
And all of his kids.
Yeah, and he's got a lot of them.
Tons.
Yes.
He bought that extension van so that he could take all his kids around.
And you get down in the red zone, and the guy was an absolute monster and beast because he wanted his touchdown.
Well, that's the opposite. As soon as they get to the red zone, the Seahawks just pull Penny. They're just like, oh, you had two or three good runs? Let's get DJ Dallas in there. We're good here. What made it jump out for me was actually watching a highlight yesterday of Alex Collins. Because he got put on IR, right? So they were just showing some highlights on the news of Collins, and they showed the touchdown run he had against Pittsburgh. And I was just noticing just how herky-jerky he is, right? I mean, he's kind of got that Marshawn thing. He's not Marshawn, but if you want to comp Alex Collins, he runs a little like Marshawn does stylistically with the sort of like...
gyration ball.
Yeah, like you never know what direction he's going to turn next, and he's constantly in motion, and good luck trying to find it. There's a lot of probably wasted motion, but it works out. Penny's such the opposite. He like Correct. Just doesn't move, and then he takes a sidestep and he's gone.
Yeah,
it's pretty fun to watch.
Yeah,
man.
He does look big to me, honestly. He looks like heavier than he even did a couple years ago, and I don't say that in a like a negative.
Yes, you do.
Well, a little bit.
A little judgment.
I mean, he's the top running back in football for the last month, but by all means criticize his weight.
Well, I wonder if maybe a little extra weight has actually helped him stay healthy.
Oh, now it's a good thing for him.
Well,
earlier in his career it was why he wasn't healthy, but now it's
those calves, those hips.
Hewitt Body Show.
I think
those love handles. That gut.
Those thighs.
Those glutes.
Does he not look thick to you? Does he not look thicker to you?
I mean, his brother's a fullback, you know? Like, he's the body type.
Very, very big.
I just don't even notice. Honestly, I don't notice that.
Did you seriously have not noticed?
He turned the corner on, like, his sixth rush of the game and stuck his head down in the open field.
Yeah, like, he was, like, trying, like, I'm going to turn all this. Like, I got to go. Yeah.
Rashad Penny always looks perfect to me, so I don't know that I'm the person to ask. Like, he looks beautiful no matter what he does.
Well, it's been awesome to see him get going, but he does look a little bit bigger, and I do wonder if that's helped him play through a little bit of contact, break some tackles, because what was the deal? The deal was always, you know, if there is a crease there, he's going to get you more than the other guys, mm-hmm. even Chris Carson, because he's got that kind of gear. But the problem was when there was not a crease, it was a zero.
But he's been pretty good in those spots last couple weeks. Like, there have been moments where it's like, oh, there's not much there. Oh, he's
I'd argue that's been the biggest difference in the last month.
Agreed.
Well, A, he's available, and B, he's been able to, like that play, when it's clogged up, be able to sidestep and then get going and get it into a gear that the other guys just don't have.
Have they also used him with some different styles of run? Like, I've always, my opinion on him has always been let him run downhill, hand him the ball. I know Russ was under center a lot more in this game. I haven't, like, gone through and figured out whether most of Penny's runs came with Russ under center or any of that, but it sure seemed like.
Feels like it.
Yeah, like, he's a good downhill runner rather than, like, the draw or that type of stuff where he's got to, like, work up to speed.
Well, yeah. I don't think he was a great zone read, right, in the shotgun and doing that stuff. But this outside, you know, zone is something he's super comfortable with. He's been a great, I believe, one of his touchdowns early in Philly a couple years ago in a trap play where he just hits it, where he can just accelerate because he has unique acceleration.
And
that's why he was
counter,
a first-round pick.
He's good with the weak side counter.
He's good with the weak side
they
counter.
They ran one of those to great success. I heard somebody else say that, so I'm just parroting it. obviously, I did not notice the weak side counter, but I heard Mark Schlereth say it to Bob and Dave yesterday.
Good. Yes. He is, he's
Do you
playing...
think the weak side counter feels bad that it's not the strong side counter? Like, do you think it feels a little inadequate about being
not at
the
all.
Weak side?
Absolutely
it
not.
It likes
strong
being
side,
the weak,
weak
side,
side Yeah, it's just totally dependent on where the tight end is.
It seems derogatory.
It's like a David Goliath thing. Like, it's a little engine that could.
Right, because it's on the weak
count
side.
Oh, count me out. Yeah, you'll see.
Okay, so anywho, where were we going with this? Well, you said you wanted to not dive fully into Rashad Penny. You had something bigger than Rashad?
Here we are.
I think we both knew that once I started, we were going to dig quite deep down into that well and then see if we could struggle to get ourselves back out again.
And then Pete Carroll on Adrian Peterson's impact on Rashad Penny.
Huge.
I mean, if you're Chad Morton, the running backs coach, hearing that, like,
not a good sign.
Yeah, we've spent 3.5 years getting next to nothing out of this guy. 2 months with Adrian Peterson.
2 months? He said it was one practice.
Right? Like, also, Chris Carson, like, yeah, that guy really just doesn't show this room how to work, apparently.
Which is crazy, because that's, like, Carson's whole thing is that he's a hard worker, right?
Well, and Carson learned it from...
Marshawn. Thomas Rawls.
Yeah. Well, those weren't... I mean, well, those are different types of characters in their own way. All right. Anyway, let's come back to where we were. The Seahawks obviously had a lot of success. They did run the ball a lot. That is the offense you want to see them run. My understanding is that what Russell Wilson wants is to throw the ball more. And now all of a sudden it seems like that goalpost has been changed. So have I gotten it wrong all along and Russell doesn't want to throw it more or what? What's going
on? What is Russell cooking? I mean,
if the whole idea was to let Russ cook Russ wanted to be an MVP and Russ wants to be the greatest of all time.
So why are you backing
that,
away from this fight?
I don't know. Because
don't back
now
away from it. Don't be terrifying,
right.
Mike.
Well, apparently I've already made his point for him, so I'm going to have to like regird my loins like the Graz and see if I can.
What is letting Russ cook?
I thought it was just letting him throw the ball more, but now it's not. Now it's just being aggressive.
Opening things up early.
But aren't those the same things?
Oh.
What's the difference?
Yeah, I think, I think you should not back away from this.
Okay, good.
Because I think it was very much his
very
camp.
Embarrassing.
Well, I just think it's very much his camp that has made it a national, they talk about it on SportsCenter, they talk about it on an NFL broadcast half for the last few years. Schlereth, I'm sure, we'll dig into this conversation of let Russ cook. What is let Russ cook? You know, when you start this argument, you've got to define that. Have Jake define that. What is letting Russ cook?
So we should do that right now. What is letting Russ cook?
I thought it was just throwing it more.
I think throwing it more is a big component of that, is putting up kind of the stats that allow you to get MVP votes, that allow you to be statistically so significant and so relevant and so video game-esque that you just let Russ do what others at tier one quarterbacks can do. Tom Brady's throwing for 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns, right? I mean, Josh Allen gets to cook. Look at Joe Burrow. He's just thrown for 1,000 yards in two games. And now all of a sudden he's being trumpeted. Oh, and Patrick Mahomes? Are you kidding me? How about that offense with Kelce and all of the weapons that he has? And sure, they're good O-line, but you let Mahomes cook. You let Josh Allen cook. Tom Brady gets to cook. Why can't Russ cook? Why does Russ got to play in a system where he throws it 28 times a game? Why has it got to be defense and run first? Why are you terrified of this conversation?
Well, I think I want you to come join me now.
No.
I feel like I'm going to, like, you're doing it better than I'm going to do it.
Why don't Brock, you're just instigating, and then you're going to try to back away.
Right.
Like, just push Mike into the fight.
This is what's going to happen.
Okay, now go.
You know
okay.
what?
Oh, you'll be fine.
I totally know. I know this game because Brock's played it with me before. He says all this stuff to me, right? And then he gets me all keyed up, like, okay, I'm ready to go, and I got to fight. And I'm Jake, and we're going to get him. And, like, I'm going to tell him that this is all about, I'll just use that. And then Brock will come on later and be like, well, there's more
sort of
to the story. I mean, obviously, like,
it's complicated, Mike.
Right, but that's not what you said. I thought
we were on the same page.
Say, right. Brock's holding punches in this fight.
He always does. Why would this be any different from any other time?
I am a left-handed middle child. Oh, by the way, we can't go too far down this. Okay, but I'm just going to tell you, next Wednesday, I'm going to tease. It's a one-week tease. Guess what came in the mail to me yesterday?
Your new glass, colorblind glasses?
Colorblind glasses.
Nice.
It's
because on Twitter,
down.
Speaking of Twitter, where all of this started with you and Heaps on Twitter, okay, I didn't start it. I didn't instigate it. I wasn't the middle child. But on Twitter, I had made a comment kind of jokingly, flippantly. Someone said, oh, nice purple tie. And I was like, oh, I thought it was blue. And Chroma colorblind folks tweeted at
Didn't
me.
Didn't they send this to you years ago?
No.
You didn't want to use it?
No. Like a couple years ago, one of the trainers for the Seahawks had a pair of them for his son. And I was very like,
yeah, you were all nervous. You didn't
I was really
them.
Reluctant. I put them on, but I didn't really know.
You kept your eyes closed.
Yeah.
These things don't work. Yeah, okay. All right.
No, but I have not opened up the box. I'm going to wait till next Wednesday. Hopefully the sun is out, and I'm going to do it. Yeah, I'll
excited. All right, tell us more.
Videotape it all right. So, anyhway.
In the meantime, you're setting me up for failure because you're going to tell me there's more about the story.
And he's also going to be texting Jake this whole time. I'm like, dude, you got to let Salk say this? Like, you got to crush this guy.
Hey, Jake, Salk's going to ask you to define let Russ eat, so make sure you do that, okay? What's that? What'd you say,
what?
Kyle? Huh? Yeah. Let Russ cook.
Excuse me, what?
But what is letting Russ cook, honestly? Because I do see a little bit of both camps. If I'm on Jake's camp, I'm going to say, hey, Salk, when he jumped on Dan Patrick's show last January and February, what was it all about? It was all about protecting him. It was getting him an offensive line. That's been the problem for 3 or 4 years. It's not even necessarily about the system and plowing through 3 coordinators in those 5 years. It's about, hey, let's rectify this front and stop getting me hit. And that's what he wanted more than anything else.
Well, hold on, maybe. It's one of the things he wanted more than anything else. Do you know how many things he wanted? At least 6, according to Jason LaCanfora, who I think just got this directly from Mark Rogers.
Could go back to where this kind of started last January and February, my initial reporting around the Super Bowl about Russell Wilson's discontent with the offensive scheme, play calling, personnel decisions, overall direction of the Seattle Seahawks franchise. And it's, you know, there were 6 boxes for the Seahawks to check to try to sell him on a long-term future in Seattle. I'm not sure they checked any of them.
I gotta say, of all the things I've heard, that one might annoy me the most.
What, in delivery or?
Oh, not the way it's not LaCanfora. No, he doesn't annoy me.
The list of grievances?
Yeah. I'm here with my list of grievances.
I
got 6 of them. Here's the piece of paper. Go check these off the box.
What are they?
See you in a year.
What were they? I tried to write them down.
He doesn't say what they all are. He mentioned some things that are possibilities.
Direction, scheme, play calling, coordinator.
They didn't check off any of the boxes. I mean, they hired his handpicked offensive coordinator, but they didn't check off any of the boxes.
I'm not sure they checked any of them.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. That really bothers me. And then the end of it is like, well, they're going to know now that he wants out of here. Like, okay. Like, I don't know. There's something about handing your boss a list of demands like that is just sort of, not, it's not, it's not for me.
It's off-putting. It's like toilet banaca.
It's just off-putting.
Yes.
So, you know, on one hand, Brock, like, I understand, yes, it has been about protecting him, and he's right about that. Their offensive line has not been good enough over the years, and whether it's Schneider or Pete or Cable or whoever else it is, they seem like they've consistently gotten it wrong at that position. But this offensive line this year is no worse than it's been in the past. Arguably, it's been slightly better,
mm-hmm.
and Russell's not been as good.
Mm-hmm.
And the late game, you know, heroics have not been there, not one time. And in the couple of instances where he's had those moments, he's been criticized a little bit by his head coach, who said he shouldn't have taken a sack. That one was on him. And yep. he shouldn't have, and he should have taken some of the checkdowns against Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And both times, Russ bristled. No yep. thanks. I don't want to hear it.
Yep.
So, you know, I like, yeah, okay, that's part of it. And then that part of it, I agree with Russ. In the I just want to throw the ball around part.
How many times did they throw it Sunday? 26, 24? Do you remember what could you pull? Like, I guess I could pull that up. How many times they throw it against Detroit? It was certainly not more than, it was less than 30.
Right.
I know that. And I think it was somewhere around 26.
And Russ was, as usual, incredibly efficient with what he you know, with the chances he had.
Yes.
It was vintage Russ and Pete. It was perfect.
And he ran, and they play passed, and they moved, and he really didn't miss. I mean, maybe missed one throw.
He missed two throws the whole day, as far as I saw.
The red zone little slant to DK.
Maybe three. He threw the. It was a bad throw to Rashad Penny out of the backfield. There was a bad throw to DK on the bubble screen there, the wide receiver screen.
Yep.
And then the one other that you mentioned. But, I mean, like, okay, fine. Who cares? That's fine. Russell was almost perfect. He did Russell things. He was incredibly accurate and efficient with the plays that he had.
Agreed.
I loved it. That's the offense I want him to run, and that seems to be the style
of where it all
he's
started.
Frustrated by.
And that's where it all started, right? Because Sunday, I think you tweeted that out, that this is what's best for us, but Russ doesn't get it, and then all of a sudden Jake fired back at you. Was that the genesis of this, as I understand?
Hold on a second. If that's the game that we all thought that we wanted to play that he's best at, but we're operating into this principle that he doesn't like that, and what do you make of a comment like this that he made after the game?
That's kind of the game we want to play, a complete game, you know.
That's the kind of game we want to play. Like, so what do we do with that?
Well, what we normally do with what Russell says, like, he speaks in platitudes and shrug and kind of actually try to figure out what he really thinks.
But is that the system he's best in, or does every quarterback play well when their team runs for 170 yards?
I mean, I feel like they do tend to play pretty well. It seems like it opens up a lot of other things. Brock, what do you think?
They play their absolute best when you can run the ball. And okay. Russell, and I'm with you in this argument. I think Russell is at his absolute best, was at the University of Wisconsin, when Brett Bielema said to you and me after that draft, if I had him for 4 years, we would have shattered every offensive record in college football. Because the run game, with the play pass, with the movement off of it, all of those things that he's capable of doing, it's his absolute plus. It is where he is strongest and has been for 10 years in this league. And that's what, frankly, when this system came into play, and I thought, man, this is awesome. This is Shanahan. This is McVay. Waldron comes out of that tree. Mm-hmm. This is why I think Russell wanted him. This is why Pete even went outside the box and hired somebody he didn't know. Because, goodness gracious, if you can run and you can play pass and all of the movement off of it, that will play to Russell's strengths. And I do believe that firmly. And I think when push comes to shove, And this is what makes you bristle a little bit about Russ, is he still thinks he can do everything as well as anybody in the league. That he thinks he can throw it from the pocket like Tom Brady. He thinks he can play like Patrick Mahomes. He thinks he is just as accurate as Aaron Rodgers. And I don't think he's any of those. And I don't think any of those three can play pass and move and deliver as well as Russell can in this phase of the game, which was on full display on Sunday. So there is the rub. There is the rub. And that is where I think there is some argument. That is where there have been some hurt feelings. That is where there has been a lack of accountability that frustrates the heck out of you, Salk. It's like, hey, come on, Russ. I mean, 10 years into this league, most guys that make it 10 plus years in the NFL are in two categories. They're either the greatest, you know, freaks of nature like Walter Jones, and this is my life experience, or they get to a place where they know exactly what they are and what they're not. And they absolutely play to their strengths. And I think Russell still believes that he is Mahomes, Rodgers, and Brady from the pocket. and can do all of those things from the pocket. And I don't think he's as good as those three guys are at that.
Yeah, I think you're dead on accurate. And in fact, you just said the magic word. I want to talk a little bit more about Howdy, of all people, may have gotten me down a road that I'm not sure whether I'll ever come back from it. But Howdy and I were talking before this podcast.
Terrified?
And now I know. Hold on a minute. I'll get to it. First, I want to tell you, Brock, because now that we're past New Year's, right? New Year, new you, new happy hour view. Head up to the 31st floor of Lincoln South Tower and take your happy hour to new heights at Ascend Prime Steak and Sushi, downtown Bellevue. You got two different happy hours. You got the 3 to 6 happy hour, and then you got the 9 p.m. to close in the lounge. A lot of options here. They've got mixologists doing their thing. They got sommeliers doing their thing. You can enjoy dishes. Would you like to hear some of the available happy hour dishes?
Please.
Do you think it should be happy? Just as an aside, not to tell them how to market.
Okay.
But if 3 to 6 is your traditional happy hour,
right?
Can't 9 to midnight be happier hour?
It could be. I don't know whether there's some legal ramification on happy hour. Like in Massachusetts, you're not allowed to have happy hour.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a blue law. It's like one of those old laws, like you can't sell liquor on Sunday or something like that. You're not allowed to have happy hour.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So I don't know. Maybe there's something to it. Who knows?
Okay.
All right. So let me tell you what's on the menu for
please
God's
do.
Sakes. Sushi tacos, a.k.a. crispy wontons, with ginger carrot slaw, wafu daikon oroshi, fresh mango, and your choice of tuna and tabiko, hamachi negi, or king salmon and ikura. How's that sound?
That sounds yummy.
Sounds pretty fancy. Would you call it sushi tacos or crispy wontons? Which direction would
crispy
you go?
Crispy wontons.
Yeah, I think I would too. How about Korean style karaage, aka crispy chicken, with how do you say this again? Guachang chili? Guachujang chili, foie gras snow, celery, almond foie butter. We've talked about that almond foie butter before.
Yes, we have.
How about Nitamago deviled eggs? Now you're speaking my language. I'm a deviled eggs guy.
Yep.
AKA, they also have an AKA, soy poached eggs topped with bacon pea jam and slow-braised Korobuta pork belly. I love pork belly. Mm-hmm. And then finally, and Brock, I know you know this, the Ascend Steakhouse Wagyu Burger, AKA dry-aged and Wagyu blend burger patty, white cheddar, over medium egg, crispy shallot, arugula frisée on a brioche bun. That plays.
AKA medium rare heaven.
That plays at 3 to 6. That plays 9 to close. You name it, that thing plays. Learn more, make reservations, go get happy hour at ascendprime.com. I've been ashamed of a lot of things in my life recently. This morning, and a lot of it is sort of howdy-like. This morning, I got in here. I was so tired, and I'd gone to bed earlier than normal, but I was just like trying to wake up and stuff, and I was hungry, and I went downstairs, and I ate a Pop-Tart.
Ooh,
what?
Two Pop-Tarts. I mean, they come together as a package deal, right? Two Pop-Tarts. And
out of the vending machine?
Well, no, they're just downstairs. They're not in they're not in like an old dusty vending machine thing where they've been there since like the 40s.
Okay.
But like, yeah, I ate a pair of Pop-Tarts. And I felt terrible about myself.
Were they Howdy's Pop-Tarts?
No, they're in the market thing down
there. You felt terrible afterwards, but you probably felt pretty good at the time.
You know what? Pop-Tarts are absolutely delicious.
They're so good.
You get a strawberry frosted. Yeah, a strawberry frosted Pop-Tart is like pretty hard to beat.
There are four kinds of Pop-Tarts that are incredible. It's amazing.
Four?
Yeah. Yes.
S'mores Pop-Tart.
That's excellent. Cinnamon sugar with some butter on the back of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, the maple sugar.
Really, really good.
You guys eat these things all the time.
No,
I think nutritionally, it's one of the five worst foods you could eat.
It's like with chicken fried steak.
Uh-huh.
There's like chicken fried steak, and then you go right to Pop-Tarts.
Biscuits and gravy Pop-Tarts.
I don't toast them either. I couldn't even wait. Like, once I had it in my grubby little hands, I just, tore open the bag with my mouth, and then I was just, like, eating it. I just, like, started chowing these things. You're lucky I didn't eat them like a sandwich. I almost put the two together and started eating them together to get more Pop-Tart at once. I was starving, and I kind of want to go back and get another one out for
one. Saw you?
No, yeah. I felt like Howdy.
Oh,
it seemed like
I felt like
Howdy
that old Australian man.
That's what I'm trying to look for right now. Where it's
saw him right over there.
That was me, man. I just couldn't. I couldn't get enough. I want to go back now. I feel like I'm addicted to Pop-Tarts. I want to go back and get another one. When I was a kid, that would be like a daily breakfast for like weeks at a time. Now I just, all I can think about is getting my hands on another Pop-Tart.
So that was what Howdy had you thinking about?
No.
Oh.
That was just another way in which Howdy's sort of in my head right now, which is obnoxious. No, Howdy and I were talking about Russ. And Brock, you used the word accountability.
Mm.
Is that where everything stems from? does the entire issue, not just now, but even into the past, does everything stem from accountability? And Howdy, to his immense credit, I don't like to give it to him, but I will today. Now, maybe he's just made this up like most of the other things he says. But Howdy, to his credit, said that a lot of this, that he, that if you don't cut the problem off, I don't want to misquote you, if you don't cut the problem off at the root, it never goes away. Is that roughly what you said?
If you don't hit the main part of the problem, you're going to hear all sorts of little tiny things that stem from it that aren't actually the problem.
And you believe, and you might even have me convinced on this, that at the very core of the problem is accountability. And I was even thinking about some of this last week. Howdy helped kind of crystallize it. But, you know, last week, like, hey, am I going to have to say I'm sorry to Doug and Richard? They were the one, they've been saying for years now, right? Russ isn't accountable. Pete doesn't hold Russ accountable. And that was sort of like the crux of all of the issues for them. The Sherman article, the other articles that came out, Doug not saying that Russell's elite. All of it seemed to stem from Pete not holding Russell Wilson accountable for his mistakes. And then if you kind of play that through and you believe them, then you say, well, why wouldn't Pete do that? Well, because he doesn't think Russell can take it, right? He thinks the best way to get the most out of his quarterback is to not hold him accountable because he can't handle being held accountable. And then this year, twice, he has held Russ accountable. And neither time did it go very well. The first time was after the Tennessee loss, where Russell had the ball in his hands late and did exactly jack squat with it. And Pete said, yeah, sometimes you got to take the checkdowns. And Russell said, "Meh, scored 30 points. Okay. That wasn't exactly like owning the moment or owning the loss.
Yeah.
The next time was the last loss a week or so ago, where Russ again had his ball, the ball in his hands late with an opportunity to drive down and win. And instead, or I'm sorry, at that point, well, he did have that eventually. But before that, they had the chance to ice the game with a field goal. And Russ takes the bad sack, drops him back 14 yards, and they miss the field goal. And, you know, the rest is history. And Pete again says, yeah, gotta get the ball, gotta throw the ball away. Especially in a three-step drop.
Like, can't take a sack.
Can't take a sack there. And what do we hear from Russ? Eh, I've made that play before. Eh, I've done that before.
Mm-hmm.
Right? A lot of times I do that and it works out. Okay, but not this time. And so when it doesn't work out, you've got to be the one to be held accountable for it. Mm-hmm. I am like, you know, if you are a, I've said this before, if you're a Franklin Gutierrez, Mike Cameron, you're a great center fielder and you can dive for the ball and get there, right? And you make that play, I don't know how many times, but in the big moment with a man on first base, right? And an out, one out in the World Series in the ninth inning, and the ball's hit to you, the play is to keep the ball in front of you, right? Make sure that you hold that guy and keep him from scoring. But hey, you're good at laying out. You're good at diving and coming in on the ball. So if you decide that you are going to dive and try to make the big play, better catch it, or else you've made the wrong decision. Even if it has worked out for you 100 out of 100 times in the past, the play there is to keep it in front of you. So if you're going to dive, you better be right. And if you're the play in that spot on a three-step drop, third down, in field goal range, the play there, up a score, ability to clinch with a field goal, is to not take a sack. And if 100%. You're going to try to run away, you better be right.
Yeah.
Or else it's on you.
Yep.
So twice, Pete has tried to hold him accountable. And twice, Russ has bristled at that. Is that a, you know, a two-time occurrence? Or is that the crux of everything that all of this stems from?
I think that that's a very good, deep podcasty conversation. I have.
Oh, we're out of time. So that's appreciate that, but we're
coming
done.
Up save next after break.
I have
a couple benchmarks first.
I've got three. Okay, I got a good old Heward triplet here for you. I got three thoughts for you. Number, which by the way, I learned in Hunter's Ed as well, the international sign of distress is three signs, is three, yeah, whatever, triplets. So I guess I
SOS speak in, or?
Yeah, no, just signals. Yeah, be it whistles, be it smoke signals, something in threes.
Bursts
so.
Of threes. You, you light three fires?
Yep, three little fires, threes. Threes is just the international.
You never learned that in Hunter's Ed, so I'm surprised that they taught it to you.
Well, yeah. I did.
And Mike's hunted a lot of snipes.
Number one in this is, and I got two other names, but the number one is talking about accountability. Who and when has Pete ever held any of his guys accountable? every one of those names that you mentioned.
There's like Stephen Terrell that one time.
Marshawn. Marshawn didn't even get on a bus to go to a game. Didn't hold him accountable. Sherm butchers play calls, and his own teammates are singing Kumbaya around him.
Michael Bennett's reading books in the meeting room.
never held anybody accountable publicly. Right?
Never seemed to bother any of them, though, until it was Russ.
Right. So for them, like, whatever, pot, kettle, black, whatever, yeah, that whole thing. Like, yeah, you know, Sherm and Doug are mad that Russ isn't holding, you know, being held accountable.
Yeah. Okay.
And okay, so.
So I don't have to apologize to them either.
I don't think so.
Thank God.
I don't think that has been a staple of the Pete Carroll parenting discipline world is accountability, right? He's a Montessori school. That's what he is.
To a point, though. I mean, although you talked to Matt Hasselbeck, honestly, who played for him, and he said the Tell the Truth Monday thing is real. Like, they were unafraid to say whatever needed to be said watching film on Monday.
Which is pretty cool. Which leads me to number two on my list.
Okay.
And that is what Tony Dungy brought to Indianapolis. That, you know, when I had gotten there and got traded there, I think that was year three or four for Peyton. It was year four, my third year in the league. And that's what the guys talked about, how Tom did not hold Peyton accountable. Tom Moore, right? He was just like, it was always everybody else's fault. And here comes Tony Dungy, and he's going to put five plays up on a Monday. And he didn't call it Tell the Truth Monday. It just, here's perception and reality. Here's the five plays in the game. And he was not afraid to put up a Peyton interception. And you could see the offensive guys like, oh, kind of cringe. Like, I don't know how this is going to go. What's Tom going to say to that? You know, how's Peyton going to react to it? But that was a huge part in them taking a step and Tony treating Peyton the same way that he treated everybody else in that organization. And ultimately they go on and win a championship. And then the last name of accountability, and this is one that I don't know if you had this conversation with Hasselbeck on Wednesday or not, maybe you do next Wednesday. The last name is Jim Zorn, because that's what Jim Zorn brought to the Seahawks in the early 2000s, is Jim Zorn would be the one to say, no, that was not the play call. No, Coach Holmgren, that's not the way that we designed it. No, Matt, that is not how you treat this conversation. No, Matt, that's not how you handle Mike Holmgren. No, Mike, that's not how. And he was the only one. And you could feel coaches bristle when Jim would do it. Like, oh gosh, be careful. But Jim didn't care, because Jim, you know, had full integrity and you know, a great heart about it and ultimately wanted to get everybody on the same page. So, you know, those were, you know, when you speak about accountability, Mike, that's a real that's a real deal.
Well, I think it is.
And when you want to look at friction points of marquee quarterbacks around the league the last 10 or 15 years, I'm sure that word comes out time and again in Pittsburgh, the way Big Ben gets treated, the way that Aaron Rodgers gets treated in Green Bay, the way that franchise marquee quarterbacks get treated, right? They tend to get treated differently than other players do.
Yeah. Well, clearly there's never been accountability in Ben Roethlisberger's life. I think that's pretty obvious. It has nothing to do with football, but it's definitely the case. So I know where you're coming from there. As you try to determine with the accountability thing and Russ and Pete and all of that, does some of this then, if Pete's not the guy to hold all of those guys, you know, accountable in the moment and all the examples you guys just gave, which are totally fair, did he do it in his own way last year, which is another sort of central friction point, mm-hmm. after the seven interceptions that came over in three of four games, and say, okay, enough's enough. Accountability means we're doing it my way. Accountability means enough with this wide open deal, enough with the aggressiveness, enough with the throwing the ball. And by the way, all of that is like, hey, Russ, I tried to give you the whole cooking thing and look what happened. Yeah. You turned into an interception machine, which you've never been in your entire life. So, yeah, like, sorry. But was that accountability? And when that came out of nowhere, so, and so, you know, quote unquote, yeah. to Russ, is that another just, you know, determining factor that led to the comments in the offseason, that led to the four teams that he'd want to be traded to, mm-hmm. and now eventually some of this sort of, you know, indecision in terms of how they want their offense to be, and poor Good. Shane Waldron being stuck in the middle of it all?
Could. And is it also a quarterback in his camp that feel like no matter what, Pete's going to do what? Pete's going to protect his interest. And Pete's first interest is what? His defense. It's what he built, a generational defense, a Legion of Boom. It's what they built and won a championship with. It was one of the greatest defenses to ever play. It's what Pete's been for 40 years of his career, right?
So hold on. So then are you saying if I read into that a little bit more, then in the that may be part of what Jake would argue as we get ready to debate in the ring,
great debate.
In the cage on Thursday, is that, hey, when the chips are down in that moment, when things aren't going right, Pete's instinct is pull back the reins on the offense to protect the defense. Yep. And what Russ wants is open up the offense to overcome the defense.
Oh, man, you nailed it. Oh, that is exactly what... Mike, that is perfect. That is exactly the crux of the conversation. Oh,
I'm so proud
of you. I love that. That's great. I think you've nailed it.
I take it back.
That's exactly it. That is the... The essence of it.
I did it.
You got to it. Woo-hoo! There it is.
My Eureka.
Howdy sounds like a Pop-Tart. So excited.
No, don't ruin Pop-Tarts.
Straight out of
me.
The toaster. That's amazing.
Jack in the box.
That's the crux of it.
Okay, well, then that is throwing the ball more. I mean, like, if you think I just nailed it, then really it is throwing it and being aggressive throwing it, right? Like, if Pete's answer to, hey, we've got interception, you know, all of it, like, things aren't going right and the defense needs help, I need the offense to throttle back to help the defense. And Russ says, no, we need to throttle up. That means throwing the ball more.
Isn't that what happened 8 games into last year after those interceptions?
Right, handing the ball. Right, yes.
Isn't that what happened?
Yes. Take fewer chances.
So I'll continue to play Jake in this role, I will imagine, because you need debate prep for tomorrow. You really do. Like, you really need some help getting ready for this tomorrow. They would say, I would guess, that Russell's camp, building it around me, a byproduct of that may be throwing the ball more, but that's not what we're asking for. What we're asking for is you build this whole thing around. That means add elite talent on the offensive line.
Okay.
Have the right kind of playmakers at running back and wide receiver. Don't put all your money on the defense necessarily. Make your offense the reason why the Seahawks are great. That's what you need. And Pete Carroll will go to the doorstep of that and not go all the way.
Yeah, and I think
through.
Pete would say, no, we did build this around you. Right? I mean, who are the best players on the offense other than Russ? Who are the next two best players on the
Tyler
offense?
Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf.
So what's the problem, dude? Like, I mean, like, I can't put every single resource into the offense.
Third round doesn't work. What do you mean? Third round pick and last pick of the second round?
Undrafted center.
What do you mean?
Talking about undrafted center. Ethan Posick's their center. He's a second round pick.
He was their backup heading into the season.
He's a second round.
Kyle
no, he
Fuller.
Wasn't. He was hurt. He's a second round pick. Don't mess up your history over there. He's a second round pick. Dwayne Brown, they paid the money to. He's one of the best of all time in his position. They have a third round pick at guard, who's one of the better picks they've made. They spent money on Gabe Jackson in the offseason. Kiss my tail. What are you talking about? They got one guy on the right side who wasn't an asset. And Brandon Shell, and he ended up getting replaced along the way. So what are you talking about? And by the way, the other guy we spent money on in the offseason was Gerald Everett, who, as far as I can tell, was okay.
No. The money spent in the offseason was all on the defensive line. The money spent in your first acquisitions were Carlos Dunlap and Benson Mayowa, and let's get this D-line right.
They spent like $30 on those guys. They didn't spend any money on them.
Nah, you spent on all the defensive
The only
line.
Guy, who was the highest paid free agent they signed this offseason? Wasn't it Gerald Everett?
I think it was Dunlap, even with a renewed deal, because Everett was a 1 year, $8 million.
In terms of an average per year. I think it
probably
was.
Redoing Gabe Jackson.
I'm not
deal.
Talking about redoing deal. Free agent signing, for God's sakes. Wasn't that Gerald Everett? I think it was.
Well, before you debate, you better have that.
But for argument's sake, we'll say it was.
Okay. So what are you talking about? All of the assets are there. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, who, by the way, they re-signed to a gigantic deal. Was it $18 million deal? And also Gerald Everett. So that's bunk. That's a bad theory. There's been plenty of resources spent on weaponry and offensive line and all that. Now, maybe they've gotten some of it wrong. But Russ gets it wrong himself when he shows up and is like, get me Greg Olsen and his rotting corpse. Like, that doesn't work any better either. So what are you talking about? That's not a very good argument that what I want is it to be built around me. It is built around you. It's just built around the things I think you're best at doing rather than the ones you want to do. That's the difference.
Are there examples of that in a team with an offensive identity and a defensive head coach? I mean, it's not Andy Reid. It's not Bruce Arians.
It was true of Belichick in 2007.
Yeah. Maybe Sean McDermott in Buffalo. It's a team that you identify as an offense.
Oh, do you? I don't know. Yeah. I think I might identify them as a defense. I mean, their quarterback's not very good, so I guess I just think of them as sort of a big defensive team. Just me.
He's pretty good. He's making 40.
He's fine. He's been better. I'm not going to argue about it. But no, I don't know how many of them there are. Belichick, it seemed like, did it one year just to like show everybody he could. It was like, oh, yeah, you watch what I can do.
Watch.
Oh, you guys want wide open offense? Watch this. Let's see what I could do.
Yeah, it's so funny, man, through this conversation. And I know it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago. We talked an awful lot. And I gave you the hypothetical with Jody Allen and everything else. And just it's big picture words, accountability, right? It's a big picture topic. And I just honestly, as we're having this and listening to you and debating this, it just comes down to trust, which is a word that Matt Hasselbeck I know would use. It's a word that I would use. It's a word that I go back that Peyton Manning had to gain the trust of Tony Dungy, that he had to trust him. Like, okay, if you're going to hold me as accountable and you're going to go about it this way, I need to trust that, you know, this is going to work. And ultimately he bought into it. And ultimately Jim Zorin, you know, had to gain and have Matt and Mike Holmgren trust one another. And they did all the way to a Super Bowl appearance. And at that point, the high point of the franchise. And is, you know, this debate, like I think Russ's camp and Jake's going to say, after 10 years, how can you not trust me? Right? I'm the winningest quarterback. I've done all of these things. I've won a Super Bowl, nearly a second. I'm taking the playoffs every year. Part of the reason we're not this year is, unfortunately, I butchered my finger.
But it's more than that. And I think what it is it's the, I've used this point now a couple of times in this story on the show in the morning, is more is not always more. Sometimes less is more, right? And sometimes we talk about this in my house because my wonderful younger daughter, Cecily. And for those people who haven't heard me talk about her in a long time, since she was a toddler and a huge, gigantic problem to deal with, she's wonderful. She couldn't be better, honestly. All the things that were troubling about her as a young child they're gone. She's awesome. I mean, they're still part of her personality, but they're great now. And she's just a person who thinks more is more. Right? Like, hey, we're going to make cookies. Okay, perfect. And I want to put some frosting on them. Great. Yeah, put a little frosting on there. Maybe a chocolate chip. Hey, and I also want to add a Snickers bar on there. And I want to put some hot fudge. And I want to put a marshmallow. And like, whoa.
Got any sprinkles?
More is not always more. Sometimes less is more, right? Another example of this would be, I got Seth Smith. Professional hitter, difficult name to say.
Gosh, you still say his
I
name.
I never though. Should. I know.
No.
And you know what? You play him against righties, that guy's going to hit you 350. Like, he will kill right-handers. Why doesn't the manager put him in against lefties? This manager's an idiot. I want more Seth Smith. No, more's not more. You start putting him in against lefties, and guess what? He's not going to hit 350. He's going to hit, like, 230. And more is not more. More is less. And I think some of that is the argument with Russ. Yeah, I trust you to do what I want you to do the things that you're great at, to be Russell Wilson, the most efficient quarterback of all time, not to be Tom Brady, not to be Patrick Mahomes, not to be Aaron Rodgers. You're not those guys. You're Russ. I do trust you to be Russell Wilson.
And more is not more, Pete. And just because Richard Sherman was 6'3 and a freak of nature and was able to convert from a wide receiver in college and play 1 year a corner and become one of the greats to ever do it, doesn't mean this other 6'3 guy, Thurald Simon, who couldn't play at LSU, should start in the Super Bowl.
If I'm bringing out Seth Smith, you shouldn't bring out Thurald Simon. These names are just getting ridiculous.
Right, I mean, he's going to go down the same. He could go down, and his camp could go down that same list of a number of these picks and the number of people that you have just tried to slot.
That's
in
how that
say,
goes. I mean, like, you could do that for 32 different general managers. I mean, like, that's how
yes,
it is.
You could.
I mean,
yes,
like, you're just not going to hit on enough of those guys. That's true of everybody.
Yep.
But the point is well taken. And trust and accountability, obviously, major, major factors in whatever's going on right now.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, Brock, let's do a little Blue 88. I got three good football questions for you, and let's start here. I don't know what the Seahawks are going to do at quarterback. I don't know if Russell's going to be back. I told you, I've been back and forth on this 100 times. Like, part of me thinks that they may pull the trigger. Part of me says there's nobody in free agency, and okay, well, if there's nobody in free agency, then maybe they can get a lot for him, and it's a bad draft class. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, then what are they going to do? And does Pete want to go back and forth in my own head 100 times? But in talking to Hasselbeck today, he did bring up an interesting name who's not a free agent. It's not Baker Mayfield. It's not, you know, not one of the sort of big name free agents. But it was a name that was in the back of my mind. How would you feel about this guy?
To me, Tyler Huntley, there's something special about him.
Yeah, what is it? What is it specifically that you like about him?
He's a really, really strong pocket passer. Really strong. 23 years old and hasn't, you know, I don't know how he slid under the radar. Maybe because he's barely 6'1". Maybe because in interview processes he doesn't look traditionally what you think of when you think of, like, oh, we're going to put this guy out front on the podium. But I love everything about him.
Gosh, sounds kind of like a Hasselbeck that was traded for as a, well, what was Matt, 6th round, 7th round pick to Green Bay, and he had done some good things in preseason, and I don't even think that Matt had started as much as Huntley has started now mm-hmm. with the Ravens when the Seahawks went out and acquired Matt Hasselbeck, much to my chagrin at that time, unfortunately. I, too, have been a big fan of Tyler Huntley. I think he was one of, if you were to say to me, hey, last 10 years calling games, who's just one of the flat-out toughest QBs? Just toughest. Not prettiest, not best thrower, not projecting anything. Just who is one of the toughest dudes that you covered? Tyler Huntley would be way up on that list, if not number one at Utah. I mean, he took a pounding and continued to get up time after time after time. And, yeah, was super, super productive. Should have been, could have been, would have been in the national semifinal for Utah 2 years ago or 3 years ago had they been able to beat Oregon in the Pac-12 title game. They did not. They got run on, got run over, got all beat up in that game as well. But I like Huntley, but Russell Wilson to Huntley, Pete Carroll the last couple years of his deal, Mike, that's where I have just a hard time. And I know that John Clayton has tried to kill this conversation at any time. The trade gets brought up. He thinks it's a non-starter. We're not going to go there. I'm tired of it. We are going to go there. It's not going to get tiring. It's going to take lots of different angles to it. But that's the one that I have a hard time absorbing, is that Pete, at this tenure, at this time, going to someone of that experience level, someone of that throwing level.
But you've got to remember, it's not Russell Wilson and Tyler Huntley swapped out. It's Russell Wilson in exchange for Tyler Huntley and all of the other resources and picks and money and everything else that goes with it.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, like, you're free up $30 million and you bring back draft picks and.
Yes.
That's the way you've got to look at it. It's not fair to just, it's like the old Felix Hernandez thing. Well, why wouldn't we want Felix Hernandez? Well, it's not that you don't. It's that you might more value the things you could get back for him.
Fair.
Question number two. What'd you think of Cody Barton this weekend? Because I would say he is the number one person I'm looking forward to watching in the Arizona game.
It was the best game of his career, bar none. Not even close. When he had to play strong side linebacker and try to set an edge at his size, we talked a lot about that. When he's gotten reps playing some of the weak side linebacker, you know, doing some of all that is asked of that position from an explosiveness, covering ground standpoint, a little challenging. Playing the position that he is most natural playing, what he played at Utah, playing between the tackles, triggering to run and play action, getting underneath passes, knocking a couple passes down, sticky in coverage. Coming up to the line of scrimmage, does he have 260 pounds of force? No. Does he have to hang on for dear life to legs at times? Yes. But man, was he aggressive. Did he trigger quickly and play by far, Mike, his best game as a Seahawk? I really do believe all of that.
If he backs that up with playing another really good game, how does that affect Bobby Wagner's offseason?
Well, I think Bobby Wagner's offseason is going to be affected anyway. I just don't think this tape, and God bless him for getting to a Pro Bowl and his peers loving him and looking at a stat sheet and seeing an immense amount of tackles, his impact, his influence, his just putting a stamp on game, on halves, on quarters, on series throughout the course of the season is just not worthy of $18+ million
that he was able to negotiate. I think I get that. But what about Bobby back at $12 million versus Bobby not here?
Yeah, I think Bobby back at 12 million is a much more palatable, reasonable number. But I
and is Bobby at 12 million more valuable for the Seahawks in the next year or two than Cody Barton for free?
The million or 2 million bucks. I mean, the challenge with Barton is going to be availability because of his size. I mean, he's not a big dude. He's going to get beat up in there. That is the one thing that the Bobby, other than this knee injury, unfortunately, he's been unbelievably available. I think he's played to trying to stay available rather than with just the unleashed chaos and just physical violence that we've seen from him in the past. I think I said this to you on Monday, Mike, after the last Seahawks game. If you were to say to me, who do I feel better about being back in 2022, Russell or Bobby? I think I feel better about Russell being back because I think Bobby, when they come to him for a contract renewal, is going to say what Richard Sherman and some of the others have said. No way. Absolutely not. You cut me then. And let me see what this market is going to provide for me.
Question number three. What's going on at UW? I saw Junior Adams left. I know he was one of their big recruiters. I saw Tosh Lupoi, who used to be a big recruiter for them and has been in the NFL the last couple of years, just also signed at Oregon. Like, what's going on over there? I don't know how much to make of those things, so let me know. What's going on?
Well, I mean, Oregon is a very attractive job right now. Oregon is a more attractive job to Junior Adams from a pay standpoint. From a young staff standpoint, where their brand is, where their program is, where their talent level is right now, it is a more attractive job. And he got offered a receiver plus an associate head coach plus, is a significant amount of money as well. And I think all of those factors say, yeah, then let me head down to Eugene. And that is, and let me not minimize it, that is a significant, significant loss for the University of Washington, for Kalen DeBoer, who wanted him, who kept him on, who was one of the few coaches that was kept and to stay on Kalen's new staff. But ultimately, Oregon was more attractive, was more financially lucrative. The brand and the program's in a better place, and he left. Tosh Lupoi doesn't really have anything to do with that. He was not going to be someone that Kalen DeBoer or Washington wanted. He'd been in the NFL the last 3 years, but he too is lured, I'm sure, to Oregon and where they're at and they're standing on the West Coast right now.
So where's UW at?
UW is in rebuild mode. UW is in rebuild the brand mode. UW is rebuild from a brutal season. UW is rebuild a roster that right now has lots and lots of holes in it. And UW is clearly right now in rebuild mode.
When you talk about the transfer portal all the time. When do you have to transfer by? Like, when do you have to be in the portal?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Does it have a deadline?
I don't. That's a good...
Realistically, you need to now because with signing day, the second signing day coming up, teams want to know what's our...
What's going to say? Like, does it close up like a portal to another galaxy where eventually it like...
no.
Like
no.
The thing closes no. And if you're not... Nope. If you haven't jumped through with your feet, you're stuck on the other side?
No. And those, whatever there are, 1,000 kids that are sitting right now in that portal without a home.
What happens if it closes there's while they're in there? What happens to them? Do they just end up in any galaxy at all?
Have you not seen the Dr. Pepper commercial where they just jump out the other side? Oh, I got a punter.
They're
don't want a
Fansville.
Punter. Yeah, they're in Fansville. Go jump back in that portal. Let's see what comes out.
There's people in Fansville. They don't even know they're in Fansville. So
or
sad.
Or better though. Yet, maybe even Quantum Leap. Yeah. Can I get Steve Entman from 1991? Can he jump out of this portal, please?
Jeez.
Can I get Mario Bailey? Can I get somebody
Scott
to
Bakula?
Jump out of that portal? Yes.
All right.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of kids in that portal, and there is opportunity there. There's a lot of programs. LSU, I was just watching their game last night, and Brian Kelly saying, yeah, we're going to have to entertain that portal more than we have. I'm sure Kalen DeBoer, if and when he's asked about that, hey, how do you want to build this thing? I think he's going to want to say, hey, I would love to build it through the high school ranks and develop guys and take them from freshman through junior or senior year. But the reality of where our scholarship situation is now and the amount of turnover, we're going to absolutely have to be aggressive in the transfer portal, both in February, in April, into the next summer, and fill and patch a bunch of areas, as I said, in a rebuild, need to be bolstered.
What do you think of Brian Kelly saying the Bostonians don't have an accent?
Yeah, well,
I think Hasselbeck said he was joking. That was the whole idea. He was making a joke. He's just not funny.
There's just no delivery.
just a terrible, terrible sense of humor.
Yeah, I think after the family.
Right. It has to be, right?
I think after family.
Family. Oh,
I think after that whole debacle,
yeah.
I don't know if you wanted to be like tongue in cheek.
Right.
I think, and he addressed it, and he's, he kind of had some fun. And if he would have just done that,
yeah.
That would have been a much better look than trying to pull that off.
All right, we got to go. I think this podcast is like 4 hours long now at this point. We gotta run. I think we're done for this week. Next week will be the season finale for the Seahawks. So we will be coming off the final game of the year. No playoffs, obviously. We'll see if any changes happen by then and, you know, what start predicting what will start going on in this offseason. But, Brock, this has been a raucous affair. Thank you for preparing me for my
I feel like your loins are girded.
I don't know.
I
don't
feel like you were thinking about backing out, but now you're not going to back out.
I still might cancel.
You're not going
to
back out.
We'll see. You'll know tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. Other than that, I can't tell you. We'll talk to you guys all together next week. Until then, the hay
is in the barn.
See everybody.
Get to the chopper!